Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it is Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Good Sunday evening, everybody. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, back in the saddle with you after a few weeks off, and I am ready and raring to go. The pro wrestling world did not stop turning because I was on break, so we have a lot to catch up on here tonight. Don't forget our number to call, 515-605-9345, if you'd like to talk to us about any of the big events that have happened recently in pro wrestling or that are coming up in pro wrestling. We also have a new email, wnialivecast@gmail.com. If you can send an email there rather than calling us up, maybe you listen to us on delay, can't listen live, that sort of thing. We can still get to your question or comment if you do that. I would like to take a second to thank Zach Haydorn, Robert Vallejos, Rich Fan, Mike McMahon, and Landon Pipkin, who all filled in for me while I was waiting these last few weeks. And, of course, Mike and Landon covered the Impact Homecoming pay-per-view last week right here on Wrestling Night in America, so be sure to check that out. We've got pay-per-views coming up with the Royal Rumble 2 weeks away. And, of course, on that night, we will be talking to you right after the Royal Rumble goes off the air. We here at Wrestling Night in America go on the air, taking your phone calls, your thoughts on the pay-per-view, wall-to-wall coverage of that show here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Tonight, I welcome PWTorch.com collectibles writer Michael Moore joining us once again here on Wrestling Night in America. Michael, good to have you along again, sir.
Absolutely, Greg. Thanks for having me on again.
Sure, good to talk to you. And one of the things I wanted to really start off with, one of the headlines, and yes, there's All Elite Wrestling. Yes, we had the UK takeover Blackpool yesterday, but I know something that you're very interested in, something that I was interested in, was the Wrestle Kingdom 13 show that New Japan put on last weekend. And I want to make sure we discuss this show because it is the biggest show of the year for New Japan. And Michael, I feel like every Wrestle Kingdom, there's a changing of the guard in so many of the titles. We had a lot of title changes here. Was that more because they had to get the titles off of some guys who were going to be leaving, whether it was Cody or Kenny Omega or whomever? Or did you just sense that this is the par for the course for New Japan at Wrestle Kingdom, where it's really a reset and to the year is follows what happens at Wrestle Kingdom, and so they kind of have a changing of the guard there every year?
Yeah, this just seemed to me more, I mean, there was always a little bit of a changing of the guard and a reset, like you said. This seemed to me way more than usual. It just felt like every match was pretty predictable, which is not necessarily a bad thing all the time, but there wasn't a lot of mystique going into it and then coming out of it. I mean, you kind of knew where, with all the rumors of these guys leaving and everything, that you kind of knew who was going to win. And I was actually kind of down on the show during the first half of it, just because I felt like it kind of didn't live up to anything really predictable. But certainly as it picked up, especially the last three matches, Omega and Tanahashi obviously had just a phenomenal match. And then the Jericho Naito match was really good. And then the Intercontinental title match too. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It really did feel more so than usual, like just a total reset for the company.
Well, let's go through the show match by match. The show proper started off with Will Ospreay defeating Kota Ibushi to win the NEVER Openweight title. Kota Ibushi suffering a concussion at the end of this match, and Ospreay getting the victory and winning the Openweight title over Ibushi here. I thought this was a strong start to the show. What did you think of this match, Michael?
Yeah, I really did. I loved it. This was the match that I was looking forward to the most. And it was one of those deals where I had it built up so much in my mind that I don't think it could have lived up to those expectations, especially since the tag match that the two guys were involved in a couple weeks before. But really, really good match. I really liked it a lot. The finish was absolutely brutal. I was really hoping that Ibushi was okay there. That was a nasty-looking shot he took.
Yeah, and that's becoming, you know, deserved or not, the, I don't want to say recklessness, because I think that would be reckless of me to call their style reckless, but Will Ospreay at such a young age, we know the neck injuries he sustained, the back injuries, and things like that. Is there a limit to what these guys should be doing in the ring? It's an all-out, all-open style that some of these guys wrestle, including Ospreay. Is it the responsibility of someone in New Japan to say, hey, maybe take it down a notch, or is it just up to these guys to kind of police themselves, do you think?
Especially with the shots to the head, I really think there should be somebody stepping in there somewhat and saying, cool this on that, especially after what we saw with Shibata in that match with Okada a couple of years ago. It was just an absolutely great match, but that headbutt spot was brutal and really unnecessary and ended up costing Shibata his career. As much as I love Ospreay and the stuff that he does, I want to see it for a while. We lost a Dynamite Kid a while back, and it's hard not to draw those comparisons between the two with just kind of the recklessness in their styles. But especially with the shots to the head, that's what concerns me the most. It's just not really necessary, and there's such a risk involved in that.
The next match was LIJ defeating Suzuki-Gun and Roppongi 3K to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Titles. This was the first in a string, Michael, of matches that I thought went shorter than they could have and many years shorter than they would have. It seemed like an effort to get Wrestle Kingdom done in under 5 hours because it is such an expansive show. Every year, such a long show. Not necessarily speaking specifically of this match, but you can comment on that. But do you think some of the matches that went shorter than maybe expected, do you think that was a good idea to shorten the overall Wrestle Kingdom card? Or do you think it really took away from some of these matches to have them done in 10, 11, 12 minutes?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Greg. And when I said I was kind of down on the first half of the card, I think that was a big part of it. These matches never felt like they got out of second gear. We're waiting for it to pick up a little bit, and then it ended. Especially after previous years of watching Wrestle Kingdom and some other shows. And certainly, with the amount of wrestling that we get here in the U.S., there's so much out there, and WWE tends to go so long that, for the most part, you want them to keep it shorter. But I kind of feel like Wrestle Kingdom is that one time a year when you can get away with a long show. Especially if you need to cut it down, maybe shorten the number of matches in there rather than cutting match after match after match short, which it really felt like to me with the first few matches there.
Yeah, I agree. It's and I understand it's one of those wanting to get a lot of people on the show again. And we saw triple threat matches here, which is not generally a staple of New Japan, where it's almost like they're taking after WWE at WrestleMania, which is the get everybody on the show kind of feel. And you kind of got that here with the short matches, the triple threat matches. And I think just like most WWE pay-per-views, New Japan would have been better served to cut back on some of the matches and give some of the others time to breathe. But, the big matches, I think the big point here is the big matches got enough time. And that was, I think from New Japan's point of view and from a lot of the fans' point of view, that was the big point coming out of this. Zack Sabre defeated Ishii to win the British heavyweight title. I read Twitter and I get a sense, Michael, that Sabre is kind of a polarizing figure. There are a lot of guys who and fans who really love what he does and love his style. And there are a lot of fans who could really take or leave his style. I'm someone who really loves it, and I love seeing him so smoothly transition in and out of potential submission maneuvers, especially working against a guy like Ishii. They're both masters at what they do, and there's a weird a mesh of styles, I think, between these two, but in a weird way, it's also a styles clash in some ways. So I really like this match. This is one of my favorite matches on the card, actually. What's your take on Sabre? Are you in the pro Sabre camp, or is he somebody that you can take or leave his style?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big Sabre fan. Have been for a number of years. I really like him, and he's really something different, and he's just very good at what he does. He's almost like a modern-day Lord Steven Regal type, a little bit different style, but that same type of thing. And I think when you're wrestling on a show where you know, a lot of the other guys are going 100 miles an hour. Having a guy that's that good on the mat and that smooth on the mat really helps a lot. I don't really see what there is to dislike about him, other than I've heard people complain about his size, that he's too slender, but I don't think so. I mean, I think it works for his style, and I think his matches with Ibushi have been really good. I mean, they really have. You're right. You wouldn't look at the two of them and necessarily think that they would have the greatest chemistry, but they really do. I mean, they really do work well together. And I understand there's fans that want to see everybody go 100 miles an hour and dive out of the ring, but I think it's great to have somebody like that on the show. He had a fantastic 2018, and I hope big things are in store for 2019 too.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree. Sonata and Duval defeated Tongaloa and Tamatanga and the Young Bucks to win the IWGP tag titles. Tamatanga has his New Year's resolution is that he's going to be a good guy now, after getting a lot of heat on social media for some of the things he said, getting some heat from New Japan for the cursing that he uses during shows. This reminds me of the G1 when Toru Yano was going to use fair play in all of his matches, and that lasted about half the tournament, or, you know, sometimes it lasted about half the match. Till he, you know, resorted to his usual Yano antics. So is this an intriguing storyline turn for you with Tamatanga? You know, there's I think a lot of people see him as undeserving of being sort of the face of the, not necessarily the Bullet Club, but, you know, the faction within the faction that he's leading. So is this intriguing enough to you for his character, you think?
To me, it's just kind of there. I mean, but everything that he and Tongaloa do to me are just kind of there. I mean, I don't dislike them. I don't think they're bad, but I just don't think he's a great personality, and he's so unlikable that I think this good guy thing is kind of amusing. But I don't know. To me, it's just not something that really takes a lot of my attention or whatever. You know, he's good, but he's surrounded by a lot of people, and I'm really that are better than him. And I'm really glad that Jay White is with that group, because I just don't think Tamatanga, that centerpiece of that group, would have worked out very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was the Young Bucks may have been their last match in New Japan, depending on what kind of New Japan AEW relationship will form down the line. What did you think of this as their swan song?
And this was really one of the matches when I talked about being let down that I just kind of felt like it never got going anywhere. I like Sonata especially quite a bit. I like Evil. I like the guys involved. But, you know, this match was pretty forgettable. And to me, it felt like the Bucks showed up to work, did their job, and checked out. Not that they phoned it in or anything, but it certainly wasn't anything special or memorable.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of nothing special or memorable, we move on to the next match, Juice Robinson defeating Cody to win the IWGP U.S. title. And I say that somewhat facetiously, because this has been, I think, the match that has been received the – not that it was a bad match necessarily, but I don't think it was received as well as the rest of the matches on the card. So, you know, looking at Juice versus Cody, Juice gets the title back here over Cody. Not a surprise. Cody drops the title at Wrestle Kingdom here. But was this match – worthy of the low ratings it's been getting by some people? You know, did it stick in amid the rest of the show, which was, you know, pretty high quality, all things considered? Did this stick out to you as something that was just a notch or two below everything else on the card? Or did you think it was at about the same?
No, I thought it was kind of a stinker myself. I mean, it wasn't like it wasn't a dud or anything like that, but whatever Ishii and Sabre have together that we were talking about, I think Juice and Cody have the exact opposite of that together. And I think Juice can be really good when he's working with the right person. I mean, that match he had with Jay White last summer was really, really good. But this was another match that just felt like it was there, and I was pretty much ready for it to be over with as soon as it started. It just really didn't do anything for me, and it doesn't sound like too many people really cared too much for it.
What's been your take on Cody and his matches on the independent scene? And I don't know how much you've seen of him, but, you know, he left WWE with the rep that, yeah, he was good, but he was not a guy who would get to that next level in the ring often enough. And I think part of the reason he left WWE is to prove that he could do just that. So do you think he has met that goal on the independent scene against a wide variety of opponents, or do you think most of his matches have kind of been let down like this one was?
Yeah, I think Cody as a character has developed way more than he ever was in WWE. I think he's a very good promo. I think he carries himself like such a megastar. But I can't think of too many Cody matches that have been, you know, just barn burners. Obviously, the match he had with Omega and then the three-way match with Omega and Ibushi were really good. But, you know, if you're working with Kenny Omega and you don't have a really good match, I don't know. You know, you're probably not in the wrong business. But I don't really think he's that spectacular of a talent. And I like the guy a lot. I mean, I really do. I really feel like he's a star, and I really feel like he carries himself well. But his matches, just for the most part, I don't know, kind of a letdown, I guess is a good way to put it.
And I think it speaks to his character and his ability to reach out to fans on social media and just the way he comes across to people, that in an era of wrestling where there's never been more of an emphasis on in-ring work and your in-ring ability, that Cody is a big star among the work rate fans, even though he himself doesn't necessarily have it to the same level of some of their other big stars. You know, this AEW stuff is built around Cody. I mean, it was partly his big idea. It was partly the Young Bucks and stuff, but he's going to get a lot of the credit for it. And if you look online, there are a lot of fans who are really very excited about the prospect of AEW. And it's led by a guy who just had what some, you know, call a two-star match at Wrestle Kingdom. So I think it does speak to his savvy and his character that he's as over as he is, both inside the ring and out, when he isn't a guy who's putting on four and a half star matches every time out like a Kenny Omega.
Yeah, I think that the reason people are so excited is, one, his personality, his character, and I think his legacy certainly has something to do with it, as a guy who, coming from the family that he did and having spent the time in WWE that he did, and he seems to say most of the right things. I think it's more of him as the person behind AEW rather than the guy who's going to be the centerpiece, because I really hate to make the comparison to Jeff Jarrett with TNA, but I think if you were to start a promotion and put Cody in that spot as being the centerpiece act, which I don't think they're doing, I think there might be some of those comparisons there.
We had Ishimori defeating Kushida to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title in a really good match here as well. The big rumor, Michael, is Kushida going to WWE. First of all, is that a surprise to you? Not necessarily that WWE would want him, but given how they've pushed wrestlers in his mold before and even now, that he would be interested in WWE, and that WWE would be, I guess, interested in him. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's kind of a surprise to me that he would want to go there, because, I mean, what is he going to do? Go on 205 Live in front of 20,000 fans or however many people watch it? I mean, I don't see the place in him for WWE. I long thought that for years that Nakamura was the guy that you could take and drop into any promotion anywhere in the world, and he would be over. And he hasn't been that in WWE. That's not all on WWE, certainly. Part of that's him. But I kind of feel like if you can't get Nakamura to that next level, what are the odds of, you know, of Kushida getting to that next level? I kind of don't understand where he would go. But at the same time, he's done everything there is to do in New Japan.
Yeah.
You know, he's been there a long time.
That's the main argument. Yeah, that's the main argument.
Yeah, and
him staying is that, you know, there's really nothing left for him to do.
He would really have to become a heavyweight and move up, because what else are you going to do with the guy? I mean, he's been, for years now, he's been the centerpiece of that division, and it's really kind of feels like it's time to move on and do something different with it.
Next match was Jay White defeating Okada, and, you know, Jay White's a guy who's impressed me this year. He won one of my Parksy Awards in last week's Torch newsletter that I hand out every year.
Mm-hmm.
As a guy who's little underappreciated, undervalued by the wrestling fans, just how much he's come into that character in the last year or so. All that being said, still kind of surprised he beat Okada. I mean, Okada came out here and he ridded himself of the doldrums that he was stuck in during the G1, where he came out with the balloon and was kind of off a little bit. And, you know, this was back to vintage Okada, as Michael Cole would say, and Jay White still beat him. I mean, did that surprise you? Not only the result, but that he did it when Okada came out more focused than he's been in a long time.
I kind of figured that this was going to happen, especially with the possibility of Kenny and everybody else leaving. It kind of felt to me like Jay White was going to be the guy that they were going to reset with, that kind of like when AJ Styles and led that exodus a couple of years ago, how they went with Kenny Omega. I kind of had the feeling that Jay White would beat him here and possibly move into that spot and get a match with Tanahashi and possibly win that belt, and then maybe see Jay White and Okada somewhere down the road, you know, for that belt again. But I mean, it was a pretty decisive win. You know, it was kind of surprising how it went. But this was, honestly, it was kind of what I expected going in. And Jay White has been really good. I mean, the last couple of years before this turn, I thought he was a very good wrestler who didn't have a lot of personality. And I think a lot of us felt like when they stuck that Switchblade character with him, it really was a mismatch. And it didn't feel like,
yeah,
you know, it felt like Jay White was a guy being called Switchblade. But he's found it. And I mean, I don't know when it happened, but he is so good in that role now. And I think he's really the guy that he's kind of the next guy I think they can move on with.
Yeah, absolutely. The semi-main event was Naito defeating Chris Jericho to win the IC title in a no DQ match. This seems to signal the end of Chris Jericho and Naito's feud. What do you see, even though Chris Jericho signed with AEW, there's a lot of speculation that he's still able to wrestle in New Japan, keeping that door open. What do you see as being next for Chris Jericho in New Japan?
I wouldn't really be surprised to see him work a match with Tanahashi at some point. You know, if he's going to do it, he's going to be there with somebody big. You know, he's been in there with Omega and with Naito. And it really feels to me like, depending on where this Jay White thing goes and how things kind of go from there, I wouldn't be surprised to see a Chris Jericho and Tanahashi match at some point.
Mm-hmm. But was this a suitable hardcore action for the no disqualification stip in your mind?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I thought his match with Kenny last year was much better. But I think Jericho's kind of found that, you know, the comparison right now seems to be Terry Funk and ECW. And I think Jericho's really kind of found that in him, and that he's not working. You know, he doesn't work like he did 15 or 20 years ago, but he's found a different way to be very entertaining and have very good matches still. So I thought it was good. It wasn't the Omega match from last year, but I still thought it was a really good match.
And speaking of Omega, he loses the IWGP title in the main event against Tanahashi. Just a early match of the year candidate, I would say, here in this main event. Tanahashi telling the story, you know, he wins the G1, gets the opportunity here to face Omega for the heavyweight title. It's a bit of a redemption story for a guy who's been hurt a lot, for a guy who's getting up there in age, and he's still able to overcome Kenny Omega here. What did you think of the story they told Tanahashi? I mean, was this the fitting finale to that story? And if Omega is truly taking a break from New Japan, as he told a newspaper in Japan, I guess, is Jericho the next one, or do you see someone else challenging Tanahashi first for the title?
I thought the match was really good. I think there are very few wrestlers I've ever seen that have that big match feel to them when they turn it on the way that Tanahashi does. I mean, whenever he's in a Tokyo Dome match or he's in a G1 final, he makes it just feel like the biggest match of the year. I mean, he's so good at what he does, mm-hmm. and the two of them together in there was really good. As far as what's next, I would think it would be Jericho at some point. What was the match they set up at New Year's Dash? Him and I'm trying to remember who that was now, but it didn't feel like that was going to be, you know, be another one along the way. But it sure seems to me like it'll eventually be Jay White, the guy that maybe dethrones him, or maybe not. You know, it's kind of hard to say. But I would bet there's a Jericho match in there somewhere, and they haven't really built up, you know, a whole lot of guys at this point that to be his challenger. So I think everything is, they're kind of getting their legs underneath him and, you know, and kind of resetting things right now. But
okay. Well, Omega said he needs a break from New Japan. He also seemed to hint that he would be back at some point. predict how long do you think Omega will be gone from New Japan before he wrestles another match for the company?
It's so hard to say. I mean, I think that kind of depends on what happens with AEW and what kind of relationship they have with New Japan. I think if New Japan wants Kenny Omega that badly, they'll find a way to make that work. Do we see him sometime this year? Does he make a return in time for Wrestle Kingdom next year? I think it's good to give him a little bit of a break. I mean, he's kind of been the guy for the last 3 years now, and he's done a lot, and there's not a lot of fresh things for him to do right now. So taking a little bit of a break and kind of resetting things, I think, is good. When he comes back, we can always see another match with Jay White or a match with Okada or, you know, what have you. But it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I mean, kind of the common consensus right now is with him signing with AEW and what he does there, whether it's a program with Yoko or, you know, what he does there. But I'm sure we see him back in New Japan at some point. He seems to be such a fan of the culture and somebody who's really ingrained in what they do there.
Yeah, and as Kenny Omega and New Japan reset things, we'll reset things on this side. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. For Wrestling Torch, columnist Greg Parks and PWTorch.com contributor Michael Moore here with you on Sunday, January 13th, 2019. My first show here on this calendar year. And we'll go to the phones, 478. This is Darrell from Georgia. He will be the first caller of the evening. Darrell, good to talk to you again.
How you doing today, Michael? And how you doing today, Greg?
Good, Darrell. Good. How you doing?
Doing well.
I'm doing quite well myself. Seeing my guy, who the old man win today, the GOAT, Tom Brady. So I feel very, very great, you know.
They'll be making, I read, their ninth straight AFC championship game appearance. I mean, what kind of record is that? Holy cow.
Eighth straight, ninth in 10 years. In 10 years.
Okay. Wow. Amazing run.
Yeah. Amazing. But I was listening to what you guys saying, and I agree with a lot of things that you say. And I think they did set up Jay White versus Tanahashi for the next big show, whatever they have. So that will be the next title match for Tanahashi is Jay White. And my first question would be, since New Japan has built up Jay White so greatly as a heel, and he gets heat, and he has came into one with the character that they made it and made it his own, do you foresee or could you foresee them letting him take the title off the beloved Tanahashi, especially after that win and now that they're building up the story that because of that match between Omega, Tanahashi is kind of a one-winged champion who's limping into this match where Jay is on the rise and on the come up, and he took out everybody, so-called best, Okada, is what how he called it.
Part of me, my immediate reaction is to say no, because I know that it's not New Japan style to have, especially the IWGP heavyweight title, switch hands so often. But then again, I look at Jay White's career trajectory, and it's entirely possible. The NJPW machine is clearly behind Jay White, and, you know, part of me thinks cutting Tanahashi's title reign so short would just be the icing on the cake as far as getting the crowd behind Jay White as a heel. I mean, what bigger heel statement could he make than, you know, having Tanahashi and taking the title off Tanahashi before Tanahashi can even have a real run as champion at this stage of his career? So I wouldn't rule it out, Michael. I still think it's a little bit of a long shot, but I think there is some merit to that idea.
I think he'll be the guy who beats him. I don't know that it'll be his first match. But, you know, when you look at the last few years especially, it does seem like the time that New Japan likes to shake things up and try things a little bit differently. I think it was 2015. They had, after the big Okada-Tanahashi match that Tanahashi won, he dropped it to AJ Styles not long after that. And then it was, I think, the next year in 2016 when Naito won the title in the spring kind of unexpectedly, and then they kind of reset in the summertime. So it wouldn't surprise me either way, really. I think Jay White's going to be the guy to do it. I'm just not positive yet, especially with the Madison Square Garden show coming up. I mean, do they go into that with Jay White as champion, or do they want to have Tanahashi going into that? You know, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me either way, really.
I really think they want Tanahashi as champion going into that one. I think they know that when they come to America, fans want a real New Japan feel, and Tanahashi on top as champion would give them that. I'm not sure Jay White would have that same effect. Darrell, back to you for follow-up or another question.
Yes, just to follow up on that, I think they should, because it continues to rise, and just so you don't play special treatments and you keep your booking in order, which I think kind of hurt when they did sort of offset booking when they came to the U.S. this year. That kind of hurt them in the Dome show this year. Thinking building up Jay White, making him that dominant heel, and also telling the story of maybe an Okada coming back and maybe unseating him in the Dome next year will be an interesting story. But my second question would be, and I know y'all haven't talked about this yet or got on this, so I'll just talk about the ending. The NXT UK was a pretty good to great show to me, and that ending, having Walter come out at the end of that match and setting up a match between maybe him and Pete Dunne, my question would be, would you get that match on NXT TakeOver show before Mania, the regular show, or do you wait and set up its own NXT UK TakeOver match with that match is the headline? Because right now that's the hottest match in NXT right now, just off of that appearance and with the crowd in the background.
Yeah, the whole Walter to the NXT UK brand thing is so interesting, because it almost like it's fish small pond type of thing, even though he is in the WWE system. So, you know, do you do that match at an NXT TakeOver where it's on a bigger stage? Do you save it for the next NXT UK takeover so that show has something to really draw fans who might not otherwise watch that show? I don't know. I think that's going to be the tough question for WWE, Michael, and this is a question that they're going to have to ask themselves more and more as they open up more of these developmental territories. And you have guys like Walter who are big-name independent stars who, if it wasn't for the NXT UK brand, would be on the regular NXT brand. So I don't know. Where would you do the Walter Dunn match? I don't know that there's a real good answer at this point.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some of those situations where if you bring those guys over to the U.S., it might be a little bit flat. But I think if you're going to do it, WrestleMania might be the weekend to do it, because, you know, it was just last WrestleMania when Walter and PCO had that match that just set the world on fire, you know, and really totally jump-started PCO's career again. So if you're going to do it, I think that WrestleMania show would be the one to do it at, because I think you're going to have a crowd that would be hungry to see Walter in that spot, you know. But otherwise, you know, it seems like a really good way to do your next UK show as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the trouble with doing it at a regular takeover is that it's a signal to the fan of the NXT UK brand that if a match gets really big, it's going to get too big for this brand and we're going to do it somewhere else. And I don't know if that's a message you want to send to fans of that brand if you really want to grow a fan base and eventually do a house show run in the UK or anything like that. So it's a message WWE has tread lightly about sending to fans of both brands, really.
Yeah, I think if you're going to do it at a regular NXT show, I think the only time you do that is that WrestleMania show where everything feels so big, it has to be there.
Yeah.
But I don't think you do it
at
another NXT show at a Royal Rumble or whenever their next one would be. I don't think you do that. But if you're going to do it, I think the WrestleMania would be the exception to do it there.
All right, Darrell, back to you. Follow-up and final question for us tonight.
Okay. Follow-up would be, yes, I think you would do it at the WrestleMania show just because you give them the feel of, especially if you say it's a headliner, and it makes the people in the UK feel like their show is important and it means something that they took their product and headlined one of their top shows with it on WrestleMania weekend. So that's why I feel like you would do it there. But I don't also mind if you set up its own show maybe the week after Mania, or try to set it up some way that how that it happened the same weekend or such. That would be awesome too. But that's something. And my last question would be, since we're coming up to the Rumble, who would you guys last two individuals in both Rumbles would be, and name one dark horse? My two would be Finn Balor versus Drew, with Finn going over and probably taking out the Beast, where Drew, who just eliminated John Cena, who's my dark horse, and they go into a match at Mania with Drew and Cena. And with the women, my last two would be Becky versus Ember Moon, with Becky going over. And my dark horse would be Charlotte.
Boy. I really have to think about this one. So for the men, I agree on Drew. I think he should be one of the final two. I think the other one could be, I'm trying to think of a strong baby face on the SmackDown brand. Maybe Rusev, but he's the champion, so maybe it would be two Raw guys. I would say Balor would be my dark horse. But I would say Drew and some of the guys you would think would be having that opportunity would be like Rollins, who's IC champion. So I say Rollins loses the IC title at Raw this Monday, and he'll be in the Rumble. So I'd say Drew, Rollins for the last two, and then my dark horse is Balor for the women. I would say Nia Jax is one of the last two, along with Becky Lynch. And then I would say my dark horse would be, and this really depends on if Becky, Ronda, and Charlotte, or some combination of those three, is going to, their match at WrestleMania is going to have a title on the line. Because if it's not, you know, I don't know. There's just so many cards in play here. I would say Becky and Nia as the last two, and I would say Ember Moon is my dark horse. Save me from this.
Yeah, I'm not gonna do much better. I think the last two are Drew and Rollins, because I don't really see anybody else winning it. Maybe, I guess I would say my dark horse is John Cena, just because I'm trying to figure out what the heck they do with the WWE title and who wrestles Daniel Bryan. And there hasn't been anybody really kept very strong on that show to do that. So maybe Cena wins and challenges Bryan. But that seems like a long shot to me. And then, yeah, I think with the women, it's got to be some combination of Becky, Charlotte, and Nia Jax in the finals there. And I don't know what happens or how. To me, Nia Jax is the last person who gets eliminated. And then maybe Charlotte wins and somehow Becky gets involved. It is kind of exciting not knowing this year. It's the worst Rumble of those ones, like in 2009 when Randy Orton won and you knew ahead of time Randy Orton was going to win. You know, those are not a lot of fun. So it's pretty exciting not knowing how things are exactly going to go.
Darrell, a very challenging thought exercise you gave us on the spur of the moment. So we'll have our results 2 weeks from now on the Royal Rumble post show. Thanks for calling in tonight.
No problem. You guys have a great night.
Thanks, Darrell.
You too.
Thanks, you as well. Darrell from Georgia checking in on us this Sunday evening. Michael, before we get to our next topic and more phone calls here on Wrestling Night in America, 515-605-9345, if you'd like to call in, I do want to talk about one of your latest collectibles columns that you write for PWTorch.com, and it is the high-end WWE trading cards from Topps, and specifically the Vince McMahon signature signed card. Just to give us an idea, talk a little bit about this high-end trading card product, and just how rare a Vince McMahon signature on any piece of collectible truly is.
Yeah, there's not much out there, and that's kind of what's going to drive this. Is Vince has never signed for any sort of trading card product before, and there haven't been a lot of buyback products. There haven't been a lot of autographs who have had autographs in person, and they look much better than the ones that are tough to put out as far as he's taking the lines of laser out of just signing a V pretty much, which is awful given the cost of the stuff, which the product is 2019 Tops V Transcendent, and in box you get a full set of 50 autograph cards, which is going to include Vince, Triple H, Undertaker, Stone Cold, and a lot of the other big names.
Michael, I'm having trouble hearing you. You're sounding real muffled.
Okay. This ain't better. Let me get out of it. It might be in kind of a dead spot or something.
You're better now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Am I any better here? Okay, good. So
yeah.
What this product is Topps WWE Transcendent. And what it is you're going to get a set of 50 signed trading cards. Vince McMahon, Triple H, Stephanie, Undertaker, Stone Cold, everybody can think of. In addition, each box is going to have a hand-drawn Rob Sandberger sketch card. It'll have a one-of-one autograph card, a replica title belt that's been signed by somebody. I haven't really made that clear yet. A ticket to WrestleMania, VIP experience at WrestleMania. It can be yours for only $15,000. Which, yeah, exactly. But what's funny about that is they actually did this same Transcendent product in baseball for twice the price last year. So a box was $30,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. And so honestly, I don't think there's going to be a lot of people buying a box of this stuff. And there's only 50 boxes. So I think what you'll see is people buying into group breaks where I buy in and I pay $500 and I get every card the Undertaker in the box. You buy in and you pay $200 and you get every Zack Ryder card out of the box, something like that. I think you'll see more of that, much more than people actually forking over, $15,000 for a box of cards.
And I know that we've talked and kind of joked when you were first on the show about the trading card business as a whole and how it's not as vibrant as it once was, let's say. What is that marketplace like for WWE and wrestling trading cards in general? Is it stronger than it is for other sports, or is it still kind of in a dead zone the same way it is for baseball and football and some of the other sports?
It's smaller, but it's probably a little more vibrant, probably a little more. The people who are in it are really in it, and part of that is the cost is just not nearly as bad as it is in other sports. Other sports, pretty much everything, a lot of casual collectors have been priced out of other sports because everything is the stuff that's hot is so expensive, but with WWE, typically you can get a box of cards for one of the top product is typically $60 for a box of cards, and you're guaranteed to get at least one autograph and then one other a relic card or an autograph or something like that. So, and the people that collect it really collect it. Now, one of the issues with it is there's just not the variety there is. When you're collecting football cards, you've got 32 teams. So, and you've got, a roster for each team. So you've got a lot of people. With WWE, there's only so many people out there. So you kind of get the same people over and over and over with occasionally, this last year we've had Ricochet added in, we've had the War Raiders added in and people like that.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting to see, as someone who grew up collecting cards and collectibles and things like that, it's interesting to take a look at it from a pro wrestling and WWE view. I as much as I collected sports stuff growing up, specifically cards, I never really got into collecting pro wrestling stuff. I got, the wrestling figures when I was younger, and of course I played the heck out of them, so they're really not worth anything at this point. Unfortunately or fortunately, because it did give me a lot of something to do with my free time when I was a kid, so that was a positive. But it's always interesting to take a look inside the collectible world of pro wrestling, which you can do with Michael Moore with his collectibles column on pwtorch.com. We'll go to the phones now, the 814 area code. It is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland on the show again. Ryan, good to talk to you. What's the first of your three questions tonight?
Yeah, the first question I have for you, what's your bold prediction for 2019 in professional wrestling?
Yeah, it's almost hard to make a bold prediction these days, Michael, because the wrestling world is so crazy that predictions that once seemed bold really don't seem so bold anymore because the bold happens so often. Do I dare say that AEW's first TV show outdraws Raw? Is that... I would say that's bold enough, right? If AEW gets on TBS or TNT, which is rumored to be one of the networks they're negotiating with, they're in the same amount of homes or thereabouts as USA Network. And I don't think they could sustain it over the long term, but I think out of curiosity and I think out of people wanting an alternative, if WWE doesn't pick things up creatively and if we go on for the same way it's been the last 6 months and if the ratings continue to go down, which, coming out of football season, I don't know that they will, but I think it's a possibility that at least for that first AEW episode, whenever it is in 2019, if in fact they do start up in 2019, I'll say they outdraw Raw.
Yeah, and it's not out of the realm of possibility, honestly. My prediction, I would say, is that SmackDown will be off of Fox by the end of 2019. Not necessarily off of maybe on Fox Sports or whatever. But given the ratings and everything, I don't think they make it through the year on the actual broadcast channel.
Really? They only need to make it 3 months?
Yeah, I don't think they'll do
that's
it.
That's a...
I don't, with, given the rating,
wow.
I don't think a prime time major network is going to settle for under 2 million viewers. I don't think it's going to happen. I think with the money that they're paying, I think they're off within 3 months. I think they're on Fox Sports in no time.
See, I think this could go one of two ways. I think the 1 billion price tag could have Fox give them a very short leash. But I think on the other end of the spectrum, I think that the fact that they're paying them that much makes it more important that they get a return on their investment. So I think that may actually give WWE a longer leash and have WWE and Fox do everything they can to fix what's broken before Fox finally pulled the plug and said, you're off to FS1. So I think that $1 billion price tag could actually give them a longer leash on Fox than other shows might normally get. But that's just my impression of it and my speculation. Ryan, do you have a bold prediction for 2019?
Trying to think of my only bold predictions that Shane and Miz won the tag team titles and split with Shane turning heel.
I don't know how bold of a prediction that is, Ryan. I think that's that might be using your years of wrestling knowledge to figure out what's coming ahead. But I'll take it for this because as Michael and I showed in the when Darrell put us on the spot for our Royal Rumble picks, it's not easy to be on the spot and make a pick. So I'll give you a pass on that one. Do you have another question for us tonight?
Second question I have for you is, do you think WWE will announce a legend for the Rumble, such as like a Hulk Hogan or Undertaker to 2,000 tickets?
I don't know how the tickets are selling right now, to be honest with you. So I don't know if they would need to announce a major legend returning for the Rumble to do that. The Rumble gimmick tends to sell itself, and now that there's two Rumble matches, one with the women and one with the men, I think they're probably doing okay. I think if the tickets were selling really poorly, I think that announcement would have been made before we're sitting here 2 weeks out. It's certainly not too late, but Michael, what's your take? Do you think if the tickets stall out in the next 2 weeks, does WWE go on Raw the next week and announce a major legend for the Rumble?
Wouldn't surprise me, but if there's any show, really, I think that you don't need to do that, it's the Rumble. I think if you could go out there and possibly not announce anybody for it, and just the excitement of the Rumble is going to sell itself. I don't know, being in a stadium that size might be a little bit different. But if they do, I don't know, maybe they, because a couple of years ago when they put Goldberg and Undertaker, those were pretty early selling points, I think, that they were announcing those guys were in. So unless there's, you know, like you said, I don't know about the ticket sales, but unless they're really, really concerned, I don't think they do, and I don't think they really need to.
Mm-hmm. Back to you, Ryan, for your third and final question for us tonight.
Okay, my final question is for your guest. You know anything about the Jim Crockett cards that sort of like had like personalized information on it about each star, such as like their favorite food, favorite TV show? Was that like a viable set right now to have? I think I have some of those cards somewhere. My parents' house buried somewhere, but I still don't know where they're at.
Yeah, there's a. You're talking about the set from the late 80s? There was a company called Wonderama that did a set of Crockett cards, and there's a full set that came out in 1988, and then there was Check the Data, because there was a kind of a preview set that they did the year before in 1987, and they look pretty much the same, but they're going to have different copyright dates on them. And the 1987 set is really, really rare because they only printed 100 of them because it was kind of a test product. There's not a lot of value in the 1988 set, really, particularly because there's so many cards in it. But it's still a really popular set, and people do like to get those and get them signed by the guys who are on there.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the phone call tonight, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for the call. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Ryan.
So we'll talk a little bit about the UK Takeover show. Michael, I don't know if you had a chance to see this show.
I have not. I saw kind of a busy weekend. I saw the finish of it, the end of it with Walter, and I saw a couple other clips online, but I haven't seen the whole show yet.
Okay. I'll run down the results here, and we actually have an email question that we'll get to. And if you want to send an email question to us to be answered on air, it's wnialivecast@gmail.com. The show opened with Zach Gibson and James Drake defeating Mustache Mountain to be the inaugural title holders of the NXT UK Tag Team Championship. We had Finn Balor make the surprise at the show, defeating Jordan Devlin after Devlin had attacked his opponent Travis Banks before the match, and Banks could not wrestle the match. Dave Mastiff defeated Eddie Dennis in a no disqualification match. Tony Storm won the NXT UK Women's title from Rhea Ripley. And Pete Dunne defeated Joe Coffey to retain the UK title, with Walter coming out at the end to stake his claim, I guess, at the title and the main event spot in NXT UK. So our question comes from Justin, who says, "Hi, Greg and co-host. Enjoyed the NXT UK takeover yesterday. They have some great talent, especially in Tyler Bate, who for me is in the top three wrestlers currently under contract in WWE. Now that Walter has debuted, do you think he will be the one to end Pete Dunne's title reign? And if so, do you think Dunne will move from NXT UK? Thanks in advance, Justin from Maidstone in the UK." A couple things I want to note here. I agree about Tyler Bate, and I tweeted during the show, I think he's one of the best baby faces in wrestling right now, especially in a tag team situation where you can get heat on him. He makes the hot tag, and even later on in the match, he can get the hot tag. You know, he's the sort of all-around babyface who can do everything really well. So I'm a huge fan of Tyler Bate. As for Walter, I think he has to be the one to end Pete Dunne's NXT title reign. I don't know when they're going to be. Dunne has held the title for so long. There doesn't really seem to be anyone else in that UK brand who, right now anyway, is built up to the level of a Pete Dunne or a Walter. So it makes sense for Walter to win the title. I don't think Pete Dunne, I think he could be an asset on 205 Live, but I think they want to use him to strengthen the NXT UK brand. And that's what their focus is on right now, and that's why Walter is in NXT UK and not regular NXT, is because they want to build this brand up, and that's an argument to have Dunne and Walter in the NXT UK takeover and not an NXT takeover. So I think if Dunne loses, I think he stays in the NXT UK brand. Michael, do you think Walter's going to be the one to defeat Dunne for the title? And if so, does Dunne move on to where he has fresh opponents and new feuds somewhere else, whether it's on 205 Live or the NXT brand, or do you think he stays in NXT UK?
I would think that Walter, I think he's the guy who beats him. Maybe not the first match, you know, maybe they go a series or something. But, yeah, my guess would be Walter wins. And I don't know that you want to move Pete Dunne over at this point. I think he's better off right now in the UK scene. Especially when I don't like the idea of bringing anybody in when the product is as cold as it is right now. Especially anybody
right.
who's not going to jumpstart it. And so I think for him and for everybody else, maybe he's a guy when SmackDown does premiere on Fox, maybe he's a guy you bring in. I'm not real sure. My concern with him is if you send him to 205 Live, he ends up like everybody else on that show. And he's got too much talent to just be wasted like that. Mm-hmm. So, but I think for the time being, I think, you know, he's so young too. And I think for the time being, he's best used in NXT UK, especially as they do more to get that product off the ground. You know, they really
right.
haven't done that much with it to this point. And so now as they're really getting going, I think they need to have them there.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement on that one for sure. We will go now back to the phones, the 111 area code. Let's see. I believe this is probably Craig from Toledo. Let's see if he's still awake. Craig, are you there? No!
He didn't make it.
He didn't make it. I told him to send an email in case this happened, and he fell asleep on us. See, Craig, you got to get in first, man. You got to get in the queue first before these other callers get in ahead of you. That's the key to me getting to you before you fall asleep. So we may check in on Craig a little later. Hope that we make him up, wake him up. Maybe I should do some loud yelling or something like that. Maybe he'll wake up. I don't know. I probably should do that, but we'll check on him again before we go, just in case. The Royal Rumble is coming up. We talked a little bit about that, Michael. The card as it shapes up as of this point, the men's and women's Royal Rumble matches, of course. We also have Brock Lesnar defending the Universal Championship against Braun Strowman. If Strowman is cleared in time, which I think people expected by this point he would be cleared, and it's getting close to showtime now, and it doesn't appear he's been cleared yet, so there's got to be some concern there for that match taking place. We have Buddy Murphy versus Kalisto versus Hideo Itami versus Akira Tozawa for the Cruiserweight Championship. Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles for the WWE title. Asuka against Becky Lynch for the SmackDown Women's title. Ronda Rousey versus Sasha Banks for the Raw Women's Championship. And The Bar take on Shane McMahon and The Miz for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. I want to look at the two women's title matches, Michael. Asuka versus Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey versus Sasha Banks. Which of these two matches intrigues you the most and why?
You know, they're kind of tied together because we really want to know. I mean, we're all kind of assuming that Becky and Charlotte and Ronda end up in the main event of WrestleMania somehow. And going back to what we were asked earlier about the Dark Horse, maybe Nia wins the Rumble and she jumps over to SmackDown to wrestle Asuka. So presumably whatever's going on with Becky and Charlotte, they're going to be either moved to Raw or it'll be cross-brand somehow, I guess. So what does that mean for that title? You know, I don't know. I don't see much in the Ronda match. I think they're just feeding her another opponent to kind of get through this show. But I think what happens with the SmackDown title match could be pretty intriguing as far as where we go from here.
Yeah, I think both of these matches are intriguing in their own right. I think Asuka versus Becky Lynch for the outcome, and I think Ronda Rousey versus Sasha Banks for the bulk of the match. Based on comments that she's made, Rousey has a lot of respect for Sasha Banks. She's really looking forward to this match against Banks, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see how these two mesh in the ring. Rousey comes at this from having a ton of really good matches very early on in her career, so looking to see if she can keep that streak alive against Sasha Banks. And, yeah, the women's title situation really on both sides, and Wade Keller and I talked about this on the SmackDown post show this week. You could almost dedicate a two-hour show just to trying to untangle the possibilities of what happens to the women's title on both brands between now and WrestleMania. And we know that at WrestleMania, it's going to probably be Becky Lynch versus Charlotte versus Ronda Rousey, or Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey. Probably the triple threat at this point, the way things have been going. But, you know, is there a title on the line? Are they all champions, but no title is on the line? Is there one title on the line and one isn't? You know, the title situation really is interesting to me. And I think, to be honest with you, I think that triple threat match at WrestleMania is big enough to where they don't need to have the titles in the match, or even I think just having a grudge match between those three or among those three would be big enough as it stands. But then, you know, you got to get the title now off of Ronda Rousey. And if you do that between now and WrestleMania, does that dim her star a little bit before she goes into the WrestleMania match? Or do you want to keep her undefeated until WrestleMania? And maybe she's champion, maybe, but then how do you get around her defending the Raw Women's title against two SmackDown wrestlers? So there's that whole ball of wax as well. And, I mean, it really trickles down to, okay, the Rumble and the Women's Royal Rumble, and who wins that? Because who will they be facing at WrestleMania? If Ronda Rousey is still champion and she's in this triple threat, you're not going to be able to face her. So that means the Rumble winner is going to have to challenge the SmackDown champion, which would presumably be Asuka in this scenario. There's just so many moving parts with this women's division that there's this much intrigue and there's this much interest in the women's division heading into WrestleMania, whether or not this possible triple threat match is the main event. And I think if it is the triple threat or even Lynch versus Rousey, I think you could make a case that it should be the WrestleMania main event. But Michael, I mean, there's just, you take a step back and there is a whole lot to discuss about this women's division right now as we stand.
Yeah, one of the other interesting things to think about is, you know, the talk about the women's tag titles. So I don't see Ronda losing before WrestleMania. I don't think they give away her first loss in kind of a meaningless spot. I don't think they should. But with the talk of the tag titles, do we see the tag titles on one brand and then a unified women's title on another brand? So do we end up with Becky as a SmackDown champ and Ronda as the Raw champ, and then Charlotte wins the Rumble, and we have kind of a winner-take-all in that main event? Do we have that, and then do we have the tag titles going on to the other show? Because I can't imagine there's going to be two sets of women's tag titles. So, I mean, there really is a lot of options, and they could, you know, a lot of places they could go, and I really do think that should be the main event this year, because there's really not anything else that feels like really just super WrestleMania main event worthy this year involving Brock or Daniel Bryan or whoever it is.
Yeah, the women's title unification theory is really interesting, because I'm looking forward now to SmackDown on Fox. And if you have one women's title, that is a way to get Ronda Rousey on SmackDown on Fox. And with her history of airing UFC and things like that, and her being this big crossover star, be the solution to get her on SmackDown, but yet keep her as a Raw superstar. So I think if you do that with the women's title, though, I think you got to do it with the men's. I don't think you can do it with one and not the other at this point. So that's, you know, and that may be a possibility if the alternative is having Brock Lesnar hold the Universal title hostage for as long as he has. But that is a whole nother.
Well, that's just it. I mean,
can't work.
Yeah, we basically have one men's title as it is. You know, we basically have the WWE title and cameo appearances from the Universal title once every 6 weeks or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the tough part. Speaking of the Royal Rumble, another email question, this one from Jared. He says, hi, Greg and team. This is JB from Detroit. First off, I wanted to say I'm glad you've resumed your hosting duties after a well-deserved break. I'm glad to be back as well. Secondly, with Hulk Hogan making his Raw debut after a multiple-year ban, what do you think are the chances that he makes an appearance at the Royal Rumble and or WrestleMania in any capacity? Look forward to hearing your thoughts, and as always, love the show. Thanks, JB. Appreciate those kind words. I don't see him making an appearance at the Rumble. I don't see a real purpose for that right now. I think WWE is being very careful in how they use him. I thought when he returned at the Saudi Arabia show that it would sort of open the floodgates and he'd be on TV a lot more often in some capacity. But they've been very judicious about how they use him. Bringing him back to honor Mean Gene Okerlund was a way to get him on the show without the risk of really getting him booed or having him get catcalled because he's doing this to honor a fallen legend in the world of professional wrestling. So I think that's the way you're going to see him get used very sporadically, very judiciously in the next few months. And if WWE feels like they're putting him out there enough and there's no real risk of fan backlash, I think that's when you may see the appearances increase. But then again, I mean, really, what is he going to do? I don't think he's going to pop a rating just for coming out and cutting a promo. So I think his use has to be organic in some way, and there just doesn't seem to be – he's not going to be an authority figure. I don't really know what other excuse you really come up with to have him on TV any more frequently than he already has been. So I think just because it is WrestleMania, I think there's a possibility of him being there in some capacity. He'll probably be at the Hall of Fame. Maybe he'll be inducting someone into the Hall of Fame this year and then do something backstage at WrestleMania. But I think the Rumble's out of the cards as of right now.
Yeah, I think when you touched on him inducting somebody, that was kind of my first thought too. And then I wonder if maybe they bring him out at WrestleMania to be the guy who introduces the 2019 Hall of Fame class to the crowd. You know, something like that.
Okay.
But I don't see him.
Yeah.
But what do you do with Hulk Hogan in 2019? I mean, I just don't. Even if the issues with the scandal and everything weren't there, what do you really do with the guy? I just don't. You know, his value was always in being the guy he was in the ring and hulking up and taking the guys out, and he really can't do a lot physically, not to mention everything that else that goes along with him right now. So I think that's probably about what they can do is have him introduce somebody or something.
Yeah, you can't – I mean, you can't even have him – you know, you could always bring Shawn Michaels back. He could super kick someone and everybody goes home happy. But really, Hogan can't do anything physical at this point unless he's just going to body slam somebody. He can't do the big boot. He can't do the leg drop. So, you know, even to bring him back – in a surprise appearance where he, you know, a couple of years ago, it was, I think, Muhammad Hassan at WrestleMania, he came back and put down or something like that. I mean, he mm-hmm. really can't even do that anymore. So the options of how to use him in a relevant way, in an organic way on TV, they're just very limited right now. This week on Raw is SmackDown. We have Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose scheduled for Raw this week. Also versus Lashley. It's a triple threat match for the IC title. We also have Sasha Banks and Ronda Rousey Royal Rumble opponents teaming up to take on Nia Jax and Tamina. On SmackDown, The Miz will throw Shane a best-in-the-world birthday bash. This Shane McMahon-Miz storyline, it started off really rough because it was born out of Shane McMahon winning the Best in the World trophy at the Saudi Arabia show. And we didn't know whether or not he was serious about it or he kind of was like, yeah, I won the Best in the World, but obviously I'm not the best. He's kind of given mixed signals on where he stands on winning that trophy. So this partnership got off to a rough start, but it's been really amusing. I mean, if you don't mind Shane McMahon being back on TV in a capacity where he is a wrestler, if you don't mind The Miz got successful as this Hollywood ego type, but he's playing heel who's, I mean, basically a babyface at this point who's pandering to Shane McMahon. If you don't mind that change of pace for The Miz, you may be entertained by this. So your mileage is definitely going to vary on the Shane McMahon-Miz team-up. What's your take on where this goes from here? I mean, do they eventually win the tag titles and become this odd couple and Shane finally accepts The Miz as his partner? Or is this all some elaborate ruse for Miz to get back at Shane McMahon because Shane won the Best in the World trophy when he wanted it at Saudi Arabia?
Well, I think from what you just described there with, you know, Rollins and Ambrose and Shane and Miz, that sounds like a fresh start and shaking things up to me in 2019. But no, seriously, I'm not a fan of it. I mean, I'm okay. I don't want to see Shane McMahon on my TV at all. But I'm okay with this as long as it doesn't. I don't want to see him in a Hell in a Cell going back and forth with Kevin Owens or The Undertaker or him fighting AJ Styles. But if it's some kind of goofy comedy thing with Miz, it's fine. I don't want to see them win the tag belts or anything unless Miz is doing all the work there. But especially when they have so many good teams on SmackDown as it is. So I don't know. To me, it almost sets up a WrestleMania match between the two, but who's the heel and who's the face and how do we get there? And I don't know. I don't know where we go from here.
Yeah, it seems like something at WrestleMania between these two. And I threw out the possibility Tuesday night when I was doing the show with Wade of Shane and Miz finally winning the titles at WrestleMania. Now, that's a long time for them to be a team without winning the titles and to kind of tell that story and draw it out between now and WrestleMania. His idea was that the breakup happens somewhere between now and then and Shane versus Miz happens at WrestleMania. So I can see both of those possibilities given the pro wrestling landscape and given Miz's history as a heel and what kind of deal he's been. I would probably defer to the Miz versus Shane McMahon at WrestleMania, and boy, that's going to be an awkward encounter because Shane is an awkward guy, you know, as a wrestler, and The Miz, for as many strides as he's made in the ring, there's still a lot of awkwardness to him. I mean, he's not a naturally athletic guy. He's kind of in the mold of John Cena, who is not naturally athletic, but he gets by on smarts and savvy, and he can be have his game raised by the right opponent. But there's still some awkwardness to the things that Miz does in the ring. Just the same with John Cena. After as long as he's been wrestling, there's you kind of get a sense that there's some awkwardness to a few of the things he does. So, man, the Miz versus Shane is going to be one sight to see at WrestleMania if that's the direction they go, Michael.
Yeah, I imagine we get a lot of smoke and mirrors and tables being broken through and Shane jumping off of high stuff, and which is okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather see that than be expected to believe that, you know, seeing Undertaker sell Shane McMahon's punches or those types of things. At least with Miz, it's a, you know, kind of a mid-card goofy comedy guy who's not going to lose a lot by getting beat up by Shane.
Yeah, it's. I think they're going to be together at WrestleMania in some fashion. So what that is remains to be seen. In addition to the Royal Rumble coming up in 2 weeks, we also have NXT TakeOver Phoenix coming up in less than 2 weeks, the Saturday before the Royal Rumble. Matches so far, Tommaso Ciampa versus Aleister Black for the NXT Championship, Shayna Baszler versus Bianca Belair for the NXT Women's title. The Undisputed Era take on the War Raiders for the NXT Tag Titles, and Ricochet versus Johnny Gargano and for the UK for the North American title, I should say. So, is there a match there, Michael, that you're most looking forward to at TakeOver coming up?
I think Ricochet and Johnny Gargano should be a really good match. I think the two of them are they're just both really good. They're both pretty athletic guys. They're very good in the ring. I think seeing the two of them together would be good. The women's title match is kind of interesting because Shayna's very good. Bianca Belair, very athletic, but pretty limited in her experience. And so it's going to be kind of interesting to see how that match goes. They're both good, but I don't know without having kind of a ring general between the two of them how that will go. So I think that'll be kind of interesting too.
Those would have been the two matches that I picked out too. And Bianca versus Baszler is one of those things where, yeah, Bianca is still raw in the ring, but she's got so much talent and she's got that character down pat that it's nice to see NXT breaking away and saying, okay, it may be early to move her into this position, but let's try it and see how it goes. And it sort of reminds me of Velveteen Dream in some ways, where they put Dream in some pretty prominent positions while he was not, while he was still learning the ropes in some ways of the way to do things. And Dream has stayed over despite that. So I think the same thing's going to happen to Bianca Belair. I think she's going to come out of this bigger star, even if she's not ready. She's not main roster ready yet, but she's very close. And I think this match is going to help her. It'll be the submissions of Shayna Baszler against the athleticism of Belair. So that's intriguing to me. And as you said, Ricochet versus Gargano, because I think that's just a match that's going to be full out. They just throw everything at each other, and I think that's really going to be a very cool match, and I think that could be the match that people are talking about once this show is over. So I am really looking forward to that one as well. It looks like another loaded NXT TakeOver. I don't think anyone's – Michael, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think anyone's going to be looking at this card and saying, you know, I don't know if this one can live up to the previous NXT TakeOvers. I think this might be the one where they finally take a dip in quality. I think the train is going to keep chugging along here with this TakeOver.
I think one of the nice things with the NXT shows is there's not really that, you know, pressure to live up to the past NXT show, because even if it's not good in the same way, it's good in its own right. And I think every one of them has been that way. You know, if you go back and look at the first NXT show with Neville and Bo Dallas in that main event, you know, that's a very different product than what we're seeing now, but it was very good. You know, everything since then has been very good. So I think this will be another good one in a series of shows. And, you know, I think Aleister Black and Ciampa are going to be very different from some of the stuff we saw from, you know, Nakamura and Samoa Joe and some of those guys. So I think it'll be another good show.
Yep. That's the way it's looking so far. I think they've still probably got another match that they could add to this, but so far, so good. Let's check in with Craig one more time, see if we've woken him up yet. Craig, are you awake?
We got Craig.
Craig? No, I didn't hear the snoring immediately, so I thought there was a possibility, but I guess not. I guess we've once again been the soundtrack to Craig's dreams, so we can take solace in that. That will do it for us this week. Michael Moore, great to have you on again. Let the listeners know where they can find you on social media.
Yep, you can email me at any time, michaelmoorewriter@gmail.com. My Twitter account is mmoorewriter. I'll have a column this week up with the next day or two on Missouri Wrestling Revival trading cards, which are really, really popular. They started in about 2011, and they had the first trading cards of Tyler Black and El Generico. And recently they've kind of found a new life because they also have the first cards of some rising stars like Jordan Grace and Scarlett Bordeaux and Jonathan Gresham. So there's some real stuff, real cool stuff there. So I'll have a column on that, looking at some of those cards and talking with the guy who designed those guys in the weather.
Awesome. And those listeners can look forward to that at pwtorch.com. Don't forget, we will be back on the air next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another 90 minutes or so of Wrestling Night in America, as we all are every week, except for pay-per-view weeks, where we will go on the air right after the pay-per-view goes off the air, and you can look forward to listening to us then, specifically after the Royal Rumble coming up in 2 weeks. Next week, I'm excited to have, for the first time ever, new PW Torch contributor contributing to Wrestling Night in America as my co-host, so really looking forward to that next week, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.